Mastermind Agent is proud to present the Interview of the Month Club. Top agents, rising agents, team members, and guests from across North America reveal their success secrets, strategies, and systems in up-close and personal interviews. You can find all the club interviews at www.mastermindagent.com.
Hi, I'm Mike Cerrone with Mastermind Agent. This month's top agent is Joshua Smith with RE/MAX Professionals in Surprise, Arizona. He works the Northwest Valley of Metro Phoenix. Last year, he closed 463 transactions with a total sales volume of $49 million. His average sales price was $106,000, of which 13% were buyers and 87% were sellers. He operates a team with 14 members, 3 listing specialists, 3 buyer specialists, 5 administrative staff, and 2 field techs. Joshua Smith leads the Smith & Associates Real Estate Group with his father, Randy. Joshua has been licensed for 6 years. This father and son team formed different than most. Joshua and Randy entered the business at the same time, as competitors. Each ran their own business for the first 2 years. When it was time to take on staff, they decided to combine forces and made a formal business arrangement. Joshua started out as a traditional agent. He and Randy moved to Arizona 6 years ago and started from scratch. They each built successful businesses through open houses, expired listings, and other traditional methods. Then the market turned. Luckily, Joshua had already set the foundation for an REO and short sale business. As the market declined, foreclosures, REOs, and short sales increased. The Smith Group's business went up while most others went down. Joshua will discuss how he broke into the REO business, how he's developing short sale business by delivering 10,000 door hangers per month, how he converts expired listings, and how he's adjusting to the new changes in the market. Welcome to the call, Joshua.
Yeah, thank you, Mike.
Before we talk about what you're doing today, let's go back for a minute and talk about what you were doing before you got into real estate.
Before I got into real estate, I grew up in the gym business, the health club business. My father owned and operated health clubs while I was growing up. So I did that working for my father while I was in high school and worked in the gym through college. And then for several years after that, so I was in the gym business doing that, just managing gyms. Started off as a personal trainer, and then I got into more of a management and sales role in the health club industry.
What made you decide to go into real estate?
Well, you know, I just got to a point where, you know, that was all I knew. That was all I ever did. I grew up with it. You know, I started cleaning equipment for my dad when I was 11, and you know, then it kind of evolved from there. But, you know, I was 23 years old, and you know, I love the gyms. I still love the gym business. But, you know, I just wanted to try something new, something different, just to see what else is out there. And at the time, you know, 23 years old, I didn't really have a lot of reserves to go out and start a business. I knew I wanted to go into business for myself. I mean, I had several friends and actually my father, who had retired from the gym business and got into real estate kind of a part-time just to supplement some income there. It looked pretty intriguing, and it was relatively cheap to get licensed and get started, and figured I'd give it a shot. So I went and got my license at 23 and really haven't looked back since.
Do you think that you had a fast start or a slow start?
Gosh, it was pretty fast, I would say. You know, I got in the business, and I was kind of in a position, you know, again, at 23, didn't have a lot of reserves, you know, so it's kind of in a position where I had to sell immediately or else I wasn't going to make my house payment and pay my bills. So definitely hungry, definitely focused. My fourth day in the business, I was at an open house, sold a $300,000 home to a cash buyer, kind of a mix of right place, right time, a little luck. But just started running with it from there. You know, I was very, very aggressive in my prospecting. The one nice thing about the health club business, and a lot of people think, you know, when you're in the health club business, you're just talking to members and, you know, you're not really prospecting, which is completely the opposite. You know, we prospected very heavily. I was mandated to make 100 cold calls a day. So, you know, the prospecting was already behind my belt. I'd been trained for it. I was used to it. I wasn't afraid of it. So, you know, I just kind of applied those principles in real estate and just got to work. You know, I'd go to Home Depot, which is right across the street from my office at the time, and, you know, every day for 3 hours, just handing out cards, trying to talk to people, you know, working open houses, you know, every single day I wasn't with a client. Business grew very, very quickly.
How many years have you been practicing real estate?
Just past my sixth year. I got licensed in April of 2005.
Do I understand correctly that you and your father worked together?
That's correct. You know, we started off as individual agents. Actually, we got my license. We started the same firm together, but again, total separate, total individual agents. And then I had made a switch to RE/MAX, where I'm with currently, and he followed about a year later. But we both got to the point where we were having a lot of success as individual agents, but we were also getting to the point where we needed to start hiring our own personal assistants to take our business to the next level. And it just kind of made sense to team up and split some of those costs in the beginning, split some marketing costs, split some assistant costs. So we actually teamed up, I can't remember the exact year, but it's going on about, this will actually be 2012 will be our fourth year. Is a father-son team.
Okay, so you ran about 2 years by yourself, independently of each other, and then you got together and created a partnership about 4 years ago.
Right, correct.
We're going to talk a lot about your team later, but let's just focus on your partnership for a minute. How did you bring that together? What kind of arrangement do you have with you and your father? What do you do? What does he do? What are your tasks, titles, etc.?
Well, when we started this, you know, the market was a lot different, obviously, than it is today. You know, when we started this, we just brought on one assistant, basically a TC, and he and I still were in charge of going out prospecting ourselves, working both of our own personal listings, own personal sellers, and just splitting the marketing and the assistant end of it. And then now today, the roles have changed differently. And let me take a step back. As far as the partnership that we agreed into when we did this, and I don't know if this is information that you're wanting, but we did a 50-50 partnership. We met with our attorney. We formed our PLLC right from the get-go and started that. And then today, as far as our current roles, he is oversees more of the traditional side. You know, he was very in tune with we live in a retirement community, not all of the sales, but we're surrounded with Sun Cities and a lot of age-restricted retirement communities. So he was at the time doing a lot of business in those areas. And as the defaults started to rise, the original arrangement was going to be he would focus on the traditional listings, still staying active in the Sun City communities, and I would start going after more of the short sales, and that led to REO. And went from there. So today the roles are he still oversees that takes any traditional listings that we may get, which, you know, at any given time we'll carry about 10 typically of regular sales. So it's not a huge part of our inventory anymore. We just live in an area that boomed, was created during the boom. So most homes were constructed and purchased around 2004, 2005. So most people in our marketplace are currently underwater, you know, in a short sale situation or now the REOs. So he oversees the traditional sales. I more oversee all the REO end of it. But we both jointly, as far as accountability with our buyer agents and our short sale agents, we both team up as far as the accountability goes with those. You know, we're both very involved in the meetings, running their numbers, making sure they're meeting their goals. And then I personally oversee the marketing end as well.
Let's talk about your market. Where is Surprise, Arizona?
Surprise, Arizona is actually considered Phoenix Metro. So we're in Maricopa County within the Phoenix area, but we're the Northwest Valley. So we're about 35 miles northwest of downtown Phoenix. What's kind of going on with our current market, like I had stated, well, when I first moved here back in 2004, I'm actually originally from Michigan and relocated out here in 2004, there were about 40,000 people in the city of Surprise, and today we're about 120,000. You know, so you can see that it just exploded during the boom. The unfortunate part of that is that's when everybody bought, and, you know, it's not uncommon at all that we meet with sellers that are $200,000+ upside down in their home. So it's been hit really hard. as far as the short sale market goes and the REO market goes. So our business model converted really pretty hard from initially doing traditional sales to going very heavy into the REO and into the short sale arena. But we're starting to see some changes there as well, too. You know, we had to dramatically change our business plan in the last 90 days. For example, Maricopa County, you know, let's say we had 10,000 sales in a month, which is about average for the county. Usually about 7,000 of those would be REO, and the rest would be short sale and traditional. Last month, only 2,000 were REO, and we had 6,000 short sales that were processed. So banks in Arizona are just not foreclosing on homes as rapidly as they were. I mean, there's still foreclosures out there, but they definitely slowed down. They're definitely pushing the short sales. Everything's converting the short sales. But we're also seeing a lot of our traditional sales pick up. We've actually got more traditional listings in the last 30 days than we've gotten in the last 12 months. You know, so we're seeing a lot of people that purchased kind of at the bottom of the market in 2009, where prices got hit the hardest. And let's say they're relocating or moving up or whatever the case may be. You know, they're contacting us now. They're able to sell. They're not able to make a lot of money. Maybe just walk away from the house, but do so with the traditional sale. So we've really had to change our whole marketing plan, business strategy, dramatically over the last 90 days. It's really, to be honest with you, it's back to the basics now for us.
The REO market there was about 70%, and it's fallen to 20% in the last 90 days.
Yeah, you know, well, here's an example. If you look at, let's say, 6 months ago, for example, a slow month for me with REO would have been about 30 new property assignments. You know, I've had months as high as 80 assignments. Right now, I'm lucky to get about 10. So it's really slowed down as far as the new inventory coming in. And I don't know what the result of that is. You know, I mean, there's still a lot of defaults out there. I don't know if the banks are wanting to give this new, you know, HAFA program a shot with the refis. You know, I'm not exactly sure what the banks are communicating to homeowners, but we're seeing a big trend in, you know, banks trying to mod and, you know, pushing, being more aggressive to push homeowners to give short sale a shot, where before there was zero communication for the banks. They wouldn't bring up short sale as an option. So we're seeing a lot of that now, and like I said, traditional, we're seeing some uptick in that as well. So it's been kind of back to the drawing board for the last few months, re-scrambling. You know, we do have a large team, you know, so we want to keep everybody busy and keep our inventory high. So in order to do so, we've had to, with the lack of REO assignments, you know, we've had to really revamp everything and change our entire marketing strategy.
Let's talk about what you've been doing in the past, and then we'll also talk some more about how you're handling this new environment today. What niche or specialization do you have in the market right now?
Discluding REO, which was one of our kind of our niche over the last 3 or 4 years, but discluding REO, you know, we never gave up sight on some of the traditional marketing efforts. You know, we, for example, we do a door hanger every single month. We were doing 10,000 a month. We just actually upped that to 30,000 door hangers a month. One side of it's all about short sales, benefits of a short sale, you know, what how we can help them. And then the flip side of that is just traditional business, you know, more of a buy, sell, invest with some different benefits to brand ourselves. And our thought process on that is, you know, when this market does correct itself, which eventually it will, we haven't given up. We still have that brand name recognition out there. You know, when you've got, for example, in our city, we do 10, in the city of Surprise, the expanded 20,000 that we just added are in different cities just because there's not enough homes in Surprise to cover all those. We do the 10,000 door hangers 1 month to basically half of the city, then the other half gets the next city. So every 60 days, that same house is getting that same door hanger, which has been a great response as far as getting short sale listings for us as well. And I've got a full-time short sale specialist that handles all those for us and deals with those. And again, now we're starting to see a big uptick in the traditional sales on that. So that marketing piece has been well for us, just more of a farming end, you know, because our goal is when this converts back to a regular market again, and who knows when that'll be, but if and when it does, you know, those are our farm areas. We got 20,000 rooftops that are 20,000 homes, I should say, that we've been marketing and branding to all through this slowdown that we've had. And then, you know, when it picks up, we can be a little bit more aggressive with it, but at least they've been seeing our name the entire time, even while economic times may have been a little worse. you know, another area that we go after, you know, really hard is our sphere. You know, we never give up sight on that. You know, we still do. I know everything's moving to internet and online and social media, but I'm still a big believer in, you know, you got to give them something in their hand, your past clients and your sphere. So I still do a personalized monthly newsletter every single month to our sphere. Now, we do email it as well to our email contacts. We don't have an address to. We do put it on our Facebook business page, but we still mail to our sphere, and that's worked out well too, you know. And one thing that we do is we adopt every buyer. So like for all these REO transactions, for example, you know, an average month is about 30 REO closings for us, and we don't represent both sides on the majority of those. So everybody that's buying one of those from me, even though they're represented with another agent, they're adopted into my database, because the NAR shows us that about 85% of agents are not going to stay in touch with their past clients, and then they're in our database. And we get calls every single month, you know, several calls from homeowners that say, hey, you sold us this house a few years ago. You know, we're ready to sell again. Can we set up a time to meet? We'll look it up in our system. And we had the house listed, but they actually were represented by a different buyer's agent. So that's worked out very well for us. And of course, we are heavy on the internet marketing as well. We're out there pretty much in every site you can think of. You know, that's just where everything's going. You know, over 80% of buyers now are finding their homes online. So between Google AdWords for our website, getting our SEO up there, in addition to that, we do zip codes on Trulia that we purchase, Realtor.com, Homes.com, and several of the other big sites to keep the internet leads up high as well.
Let's go back and talk about a couple of those ideas. Let's talk about the door hangers some more first. You mentioned that you're going out and putting up 10,000 door hangers a month. Who's doing that? Is someone in your office doing that, or are you doing that, or are you outsourcing that?
It's kind of a game of red light, green light. So as the return pays off, you know, you can start adding more to it and paying a company. In the beginning, I teamed up with a title company, and I got a great deal on getting them printed, and I would actually staple rubber bands to them, because I really didn't have the money to go and have Office Max even punch them. So it was just about keeping the costs very low, and I would, on my spare time, just, you know, go out and get some exercise and try to walk 100 homes a day and deliver those myself. So a lot of the marketing and prospecting that I did in the beginning was all done by myself. But as the business started to grow, you know, slowly I'd bring on a new person to help with that marketing piece. So currently, I do have a local company that goes out there and delivers all those. It takes them for 10,000. It actually takes about 3 weeks. They can get out about 500 a day, depending on the weather. You know, Arizona in the summertime, it gets pretty hot out here. So they can only deliver for a few hours at a time in the summer months. But currently we do have a professional service doing that. But door hangers, by far, we have found are the most cost-effective way to reach homeowners. For example, if I go on to a mail service company and I'm going to send out postcards, by the time it gets created, it gets posted on it, the whole nine yards, you know, you can be 40, 50 cents a piece. With the door hangers, it really costs us about 10 cents a door to have them delivered. You know, so the print costs are low. Again, we team up with a title company, so we get some discounts on the print costs. Then at 10 cents a door, it's you know, half the cost of any type of mailer that we could possibly do. And the other benefit about that is the homeowner has to actually physically remove it off its door. So you're going to get a few more seconds of a look than you will if it's a postcard that's in the mail that, you know, may or may not even get a glance, just end up in the trash can.
The 10 cents, does that include the printing?
It does not. If you want some hard costs, $10,000 a month cost me about $1,600. And it's $600 for the printing and the cutting of the postcards, and then $1,000 to have them delivered.
When you were putting the door hangers up, were you knocking on the door and talking to the homeowner?
No, you know, I haven't. And, you know, I know a lot of realtors are big proponents of that. I personally have never been a door knocker. You know, anything I do, I try to put myself in consumer shoes, and I know, you know, when I'm at home with my wife and my kids, you know, the last thing I want to do is have somebody knocking on my door, you know, and have to go out and speak with them. I'm just not very receptive to it personally. So, you know, I just try to show, you know, if I don't appreciate it, I'm sure other people aren't going to appreciate it and disturbing their family time. And people are just so busy anymore. So, no, I've never actually knocked on the door. You know, if they're standing in the driveway washing their car, something like that, I may hand it to them and you know, have a few-minute conversation with them. But I've never door knocked in my career. So it's just been, when I was doing it personally, just throwing them right on the door, rubber band them to the door, and on to the next. And that way, too, I could get so much more done, just trying to keep up the pace. And to hit 100 homes in a day when you're walking them by yourself, that would take me, you know, a good hour and a half or so. So it takes some time.
You've got these folks putting these door hangers up. How do you make sure they're not just taking your door hangers and throwing them in the trash can? How do you make sure that they're actually getting up on the doors?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question, because we have had that. We have had it where, you know, they just wind up in a dumpster somewhere. You know, we've had companies come to us and approach us and say, oh, you know, we GPS all of our employees. We know where they're at. We're watching them, and it ends up being, you know, quite the opposite. So it is important to get to know the door service company that you're working with, get to know them on a personal level, interview them pretty thoroughly, get some testimonials from, get some clients that they're currently delivering for, call up those clients and those businesses and make sure that they're happy with it and see what kind of return they're getting. Everybody's area may be a little more or less receptive to it, so definitely give them a call. And then the door hanger company that we work with, they do that, and they hand out our numbers. I've been contacted by numerous other businesses, whether it's a cable company or a dry cleaner or a restaurant, to ask about our satisfaction with this company. So definitely do that, and as much of a pain as it is, you do need to drive them in the beginning. So in the beginning, they would basically, I supply them with the maps that I want them to go to, and every day when they're done, they have to report back to me, you know, hey, we hit this subdivision or this area was warped, so I know exactly where they were. I can drive up and down the street, you know, to make sure that they're actually hanging on the doors. So we did that the first few drops, and then after that, we built up that relationship where we trust them, we know, we're confident they're getting out there, and of course the return. You know, I mean, if we get zero calls after doing 10,000, we know something weird is up when we normally get about 15 calls.
So if you put up 10,000, you're receiving about 15 calls.
Hey, you know, in the beginning, that was true. I mean, we would and more calls than that. It would actually generate to about 15 listings when we started doing this about a year and a half ago. Today, it's about half that. We actually just completed a 10,000 drop, and we got 7 out of it. And again, it could be because holidays are approaching. The hard part that I don't know is I don't know what the banks are communicating to these homeowners right now. And we do have the new HAFA program rolling out where they're able to refi. The 120% value has been lifted. So I don't know if the banks are being more aggressive at trying to modify these loans for a lot of the homeowners, but the urgency isn't quite as there today as it was a year and a half ago, although it's still great. I mean, I'll do them all day long at 7 listings per 1,500. It's still, you know, a very good return.
The reason that you're doing the door hanger is cost. Have you tried to do direct mail to do a comparison?
Yeah, we actually, when we started the door hanger, we were doing the door hangers, and then we were also doing a direct mailer. We would get the NOD list, so basically they're direct mailed to anybody that was in the city that was in default. And we had a different email, a different number on those cards, so we could track where each one was coming from. Plus, when we get the call, that's always our first question is how they got information, so we can track all of those. But the return was bad. You know, we did it for 6 total months, every month, and I think it generated 1 or 2 listings total. I mean, the return was far less, and it was double, triple the cost.
And do you think that's because you were talking to these people after they were already in trouble and other agents were already talking to them, and your door hangers are catching people before they get into trouble?
You know, that could be, and that's a good question. I don't know, to be honest with you, but one thing that I'm currently doing right now is we are doing, in addition to the door hangers, we are starting to do short sale packages that are going to, you know, my field techs are going to actually deliver to the doorstep. So there's a custom letter with 2 reports within the package that just talk about the benefits of a short sale, you know, what to expect, and just gives them a lot of good, helpful information. And those, we still are going to be targeting people that are late on their payments. However, we've got a new program provided from one of our vendors that we use where we're able to get them on the 30 days late. So they're not in the foreclosure stage yet. It's not public information. So we're hoping that's, you know, there's not a lot of other agents out there that are going after those, just because it's not a public record yet. So we'll see how that goes. But that definitely could be. It's just the door hangers have been great for us. So we just decided through the additional funds and that we're putting into the mailers to the door hangers, because they were just so much more effective.
Just so I have it in my own mind, It seemed to me that your test was you blanket an area in all the homes with the door hangers versus go out just to the NOD, the notice of default, people by direct mail. Did you try to blanket an area with direct mail?
No, we have not. Other than we do several marketing pieces a year that really aren't, there's not a call to action. It's just more of a getting the name out there to the whole community, whether it's a holiday card or something like that. But no, we did not blanket the direct mail.
Is this area your geographic farm?
That's the ultimate goal. I would say yes, in that, you know, we've been doing it for a year and a half now. There's 20,000 homes basically that we've been targeting in the last year and a half. So every other month, each home is getting the door hanger on there currently. And the ultimate goal is once things turn around, and it may be even sooner than that, we may start doing every home every month with the full 20,000. But the intent is that we do adopt those full on as our geographical farm, which will be much more, I don't want to say aggressive, but we'll touch those areas much more, you know, with a different campaign, you know, with door hangers mixed with different newsletters, community newsletters, postcards, you know, treat it more as a traditional farm area.
So currently the only exposure you're putting out into your farm is the door hangers?
Correct, yep, other than our sphere, which isn't really our farm area, but we do send out a lot of different pieces to our sphere.
Let's talk about your sphere. What type of marketing are you doing to your sphere?
What we're doing currently is we do a monthly newsletter every month. Now, the monthly newsletter isn't about, you know, hey, look how great we are, look how many homes we've sold. You know, it's really just what we feel is just more a lot of good home tips and just useful information. For example, this month, the one that went out was, you know, just some different cheap decorating ideas for Thanksgiving and different tips on prepping Thanksgiving dinner. Just a lot of things that value that every homeowner can use. I mean, there'll be a little blurb in there about us in each one, but it's a 4-page newsletter that goes out every month that we actually have a company that creates it for us just due to time. The company's called ResultEye.com. I think it costs about $20 a month, and they put all the content in there. I just get an email link that I can send to my printer and have it printed. But in addition to that, everybody in our sphere, we also do the e-newsletter, so we email it to them as well as send them the hard copy. And then we try to hit, you know, about another 15 to 20 pieces out of the year, whether it be a holiday card, an update of what's going on in the community, you know, just different items. With that, we do a lot of email blasts to the sphere as far as community updates, market updates, what's going on, whether it be real estate related or just what's going on in the community. You know, we live in a community that there's a lot of sports events, you know, spring training, baseball, tennis, a lot of golf out here. So if there's any special events going on, just to kind of keep them up to date on what's going on in the general area.
How big is your database?
Right now, and it's growing about 30 people a month on average, but right now it's about 1,700.
How does somebody get into that database? They're your past clients. You also mentioned you have the buyers on the other side of your transactions, your co-op buyer, when you're representing the seller, you're bringing those people into this database as well?
Correct, yep. So anybody that we sell a home to, whether it's our personal client or, example, if I have an REO property, foreclosure property that I sell, another agent represents the buyer, that buyer buys that house, they're immediately adopted into our database. So they go in there. I would say 90%. The majority of the clients in our database are who we've sold homes to, whether it's adopted that client or personally sold to. But what we started doing recently is being more aggressive with it. Anybody that we want a listing appointment with, you know, goes in there. Where before we would put them into a different campaign and not include them within our monthly newsletters and some of our spear marketing, they were just in a different marketing campaign.
What are you doing on the internet to generate leads, and how's that system working?
It's been going well. What we do right now, we've actually recently revamped and changed this as well. One major reason is, you know, inventory is a little lower, so we don't have as many signs out there, so sign calls are down. So we need to make sure that we're generating the leads to keep our buyer agents busy. So we just bought actually 50% of one of the zip codes here in Surprise through Trulia. With our contact requests that we've gotten through Trulia over the last year or so on our personal properties, those leads tend to be pretty good leads. So we decided to go full in with them as far as purchasing leads, doing banner ads. So we're on Trulia. We also do all the enhancements and some banners on Realtor.com, more homes.com, Remax leads. And then with our website, we do some Google AdWords, basically a pay-per-click that generates, you know, anywhere to 30 to 40 leads a month as well. Every marketing piece that we do, everything out there has our website on it. For example, I've got a big moving truck that we don't use to move. It's actually full of all of our signs and signposts, but we move it all over the town with our website blasted all over it. So everything that goes out, every piece that goes out has our website out there just to generate that traffic. And with our website, we utilize RealPro Systems. They actually have a program there where you can do a CRM back end, so basically a contact management system on the back end. But the great thing about it, especially when you have a team, is basically I can put my floor schedule on there of each team member. As those leads come in there, they're automatically sent out to whoever that buyer agent is on floor for that time period. And it doesn't matter if they come from our website or if it's a truly a realtor.com or homes.com. They all go into the website. They're automatically logged into a campaign. All their information is captured. Then it goes out to my buyer agent. The great thing for me as a team leader is I can go in the back end and I can see what my agents are doing. You know, they have to log in the back system to notify the client. They have to note if they've left a voicemail, if they've called, what kind of actions they've taken to follow up on these leads. So I can make sure they're getting worked, and if they're not, I can reassign them to another agent immediately. You know, because we all know with the internet leads, they want quick responses, quick answers. So if you're going to wait, and if you get it at 9 a.m. and you're out showing homes and you're going to wait till you get home at 8 p.m., that lead's gone. You know, they want responses within minutes. So we're trying to be very aggressive on that end of it.
How often are you reviewing and tracking your agent responses so that you can rotate those leads out to someone else?
Every day. One of the shift changes I had to make, I had a staff member that was in charge of doing all the utilities and a lot of the repair bids for the bank owns, which again, it was a 40-hour week position. And with the slowdown now, it's probably a 10-hour week position. So what we've done is added some additional responsibilities to her side of it. So now every day she actually goes in there, logs in there, and has to give me a report. And it shows it all on there. I can actually see when they've logged into the system last, every action they're taking within the system. We're monitoring that every day. You know, it used to be over the last few years, which was a mistake and regret on my end, but it was so busy with the REOs and just trying to manage that end of it that the accountability was lost with our buyer agent staff. I mean, that's just being honest with everybody. You know, we just kind of, everybody just took the lowest hanging fruit and ran with it. And anymore, that's just not the case. A lead is a lead until they either buy a property from you or tell you to quit calling them or quit emailing them. So now we've got the systems back into place and just really tracking these numbers very strongly to make sure that everybody's out there doing their job and these leads aren't wasted. You know, because as what we're seeing right now, the trends going forward, there's not going to be a slow week. Let's say, for example, a year ago, would each one of my buyer agents may have got 100 leads a week. Now they're maybe getting 15 to 20. We need to ensure that these are being worked. And we're setting up other systems with our buyer agents. For example, right now, if you do not have two properties in escrow going in the next month, you're cut off from leads for 30 days. So then our agents that are performing, that are working the leads very hard, they're being rewarded.
In your prior system over the last year, before you started to really focus on the accountability on the buyer agents, you were still performing. You closed 25% of your transactions were buyers. That's about 100 transactions. So it was performing over on the buyer side, correct?
Yeah, it was. But, in my personal opinion, to have a balanced real estate team, for every listing sold, there should be a buyer transaction sold. With the REO, it happened so fast and we had to grow that end of it so fast. There was a time I was working from 4 in the morning to 11 o'clock at night, 7 days a week, and I just the focus couldn't be there like it needed to be. You know, I had to focus on managing the other ends of it. So, yeah, it wasn't that they were doing bad, but there was definitely a lot of room for improvement. And since we've been doing this now the last few months, it's been a night-and-day difference. You know, these guys are working really hard. They're working their leads, and it's starting to pay off.
You mentioned a moving truck, but it's not a moving truck that you give out to your clients to move. It's more of a moving billboard?
Right, correct. Yeah, we checked into it when we got it initially. We thought about allowing clients to use it, but after meeting with our insurance company and just the liability on it, We just decided to make the decision that we weren't going to use it for that. So it is just a mobile billboard. Actually, in our city, they don't allow billboards. Otherwise, I'd probably sell the truck and get a billboard. So they don't allow billboards. So we wanted something with just some more exposure out there. So we just park it through all different parking lots through the town. Once in a while, my field techs will take it. We don't have them take it daily just because it's a gas hog. You know, moving it throughout the town and just getting that exposure. And now, to be honest with you, we've had it now for probably 3 years, and I can't think of one single call I've ever gotten from anybody saying, hey, I saw your moving truck. I want to buy or sell a home. But, you know, we get a lot of, we ask them, how did you hear about us? And they say, oh, we see your stuff everywhere. You know, that just helps to that brand recognition. When they get our door hangers, seeing our moving truck around town and seeing our signs all around town, I think it just helps add that brand recognition, helps give them comfortability to making the right choice.
You mentioned sign calls. Has sign calls been valuable to you?
Yeah, sign calls the last few years have been our best source of buyer leads. But as inventory comes down, right now I have probably, I'm going to guess, around 80 signs out there between active and pending properties, where over the last year it's been double that. So they definitely decreased. But they're still a big part of our business. We probably get 2 to 4 sign calls a day. One thing that we did add over the last 2 years that's been very good for us is an automated number. We use a system called VoicePad. It's a local number. It's not a 1-800 recorder number. It's actually a local number, and it's through an IDX system. So they call that number, and that number will instruct them, and it'll give them either English or Spanish. And then they're instructed into the house number, and then it pulls that information from the MLS, and we'll give them the basic information, bedrooms, bathrooms, the price. It's auto-generated through the system, so it's not something, you know, I used to use the 1-800 IVR numbers back in the day, but it got to a point where it was just so time-consuming, always having to record the message and then change it if there's a price change, where this one just automatically happens through the service. And then immediately we get a text and an email of what property they called on, that contact person. So, you know, we can, you know, if our buyer agents are able to jump on them right away, they're able to call that person while they're still in the driveway. The other neat thing about that system is on the back end of it, we can actually, and we've got a bunch of cards made that are titled buyer hotline number. And there's that number on there, or we'll take their cell phones and program that in there for them, you know, property hotline number, whatever you want to call it, and tell them, hey, any sign that you see while you're driving out there, if you're curious about the property, call this number, instruct you into the house number, enter that in, and it'll give you all the property information, and then we can go in the back end and track where they've been and where they're calling on. So, for example, if they say, you know, we're really looking for a home here in Surprise, well, we find out they're calling a lot of homes in Peoria, which is the city just east of us, we can, at that point, have that conversation and see if they want us to expand their search areas, and see if they, you know, if they had any interest and would like to schedule showing. So the goal is to keep them off of other agent signs out there.
And it's really simplified your system of listing a property. As you said, you don't have to use a unique ID now in the old IVR system. Do you put a brochure up on your signs, or is it just the sign with the phone numbers?
Right now, it's just the sign with the phone numbers. However, now that our market's changed so dramatically here in the last 90 days, we're going back to a lot of the basics that we used to do. So we're getting new signs made with their built-in embedded QR codes on the signs. I'm not sure if I'm going to go to a full-on flyer box yet or just get a laminated flyer made and have it somehow attached or secured to the signpost with that individual QR code and all that property information, or if we're going to do flyer boxes. But one way or another, we are going back to and actually are in the works right now of getting that created and putting that together. So we are going to go back to that.
Are you generating business from expired listings?
Yeah, and that was one thing I forgot to mention in the beginning. When I first got into business, my number one source of leads were expireds. I created, it's actually an expired letter that I use. I get in the office, and again, when you first start, you may not have the financial backing to hire assistants and do all this. So in the beginning, you're kind of doing everything yourself. So I'd get in at 5 in the morning and spend about, you know, an hour or two stuffing envelopes for the expired letters. And, you know, within the first 6 months of doing that, now this was back in 2005 and 2006, you know, I had 20 listings. I mean, it would generate 3 to 4 listings every single month consistently going after expireds. We quit doing them about 2 years ago just because the only thing it seemed to generate was short sale listings, which at that time we were not necessarily going after short sales. You know, we decided to go back after them a little bit later, but now we are heavily going back to our expired letters. And basically how that letter works is at the top I've got a line that says, sometimes even the nicest of homes do not always sell. So they know right off the bat that, hey, there's, it's not your house. And then I'll actually borrow the front picture of the property from the MLS, copy and paste it on the letter, so there's a picture of their house on the letter, and pull their name from the tax record, so they'll say, Dear Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And then there's some verbiage in there about the market that may or may not have been their home, that the reason the property didn't sell, and just asking for an opportunity for a listing interview to see what we can do differently and how we can help them. And then we have about 5 or 6 bullet points on there that are stuff that we do differently than any other agents do. And I don't even know if it's stuff that we do differently. It's just stuff that most realtors don't point out that they do. Most homeowners think the agent puts on the MLS or the sign in the yard and that's it. In my mind, it's the agent's fault that the seller thinks that because they don't express to them, hey, here's all the different items we're going to do for you to sell your home, and they don't give them progress reports on each item that they're doing. So we just point out those different items that may or may not have been done and then personally sign it. And one of the biggest things, at least in my personal opinion, that the letters work so successful, one, the letter itself is personalized with a picture of their house, but to get them to open it, you know, that's a whole nother key. So we actually handwrite each individual in an envelope. So it's not labeled, it's not pre-printed, and it seems to get a way bigger response. You know, if I get anything in the mail that's handwritten, I open it. So we're going back to that pretty heavy now. That's actually another thing that our utility and repair specialist on the REO side is doing now. But given the amount of expireds, you know, we used to mail out the 30 plus a day. Right now in our city, we're probably only seeing about 3 to 5 expired properties a day. The number's less, but we are going back to going after those.
In that program, do you just send out the initial letter and that's it? Or are there other items that you either mail out or calls that you make, other actions that you take?
No, in the past, it was just that initial letter. We may have to add to it. We'll have to see how the return goes now. There may have to be a series of follow-up letters, follow-up postcards, and even a property visit potentially. But the letter got such a big response initially that I just never felt the need to do a follow-up with it. And one thing I will do, I will say, is we'll do those, and about every 6 months, we'll pull all the expireds that expired in the last 6 months. If they haven't relisted with us and they haven't relisted with anybody else, we'll resend the letter. So some of those will get a second letter.
Let's shift our focus to a large source of business for you over the last few years, and that's REO. It's accounting for over half of your business, or it has been. So it's a pretty big chunk of business. People have a lot of questions about REO. Let's try to break it down. First of all, how many banks are you currently working with?
Right now, I've got about 3 banks that have been sending us inventory over the last probably 6 months. At one point, I was listing properties for 28 different banks. But, you know, a lot of those banks have went away, got bought out. Currently, there's only a few out of all of them that we've done business with over the years that are either still in business today and still have properties that they're able to assign.
You've mentioned that your assignments have fallen off here recently to a low of about 10 a month?
Yeah, that's correct.
And at its height, you were doing about 80 a month?
Well, no. I would say we've received up to that. For a while there, a busy month was around 50. The busiest month that we ever had was about 88 new assignments. 30 would have been a slow month. That's probably over the last 2 years that it was that. When I first got an REO, it was about a year and a half before it really started taking off. You know, we started off getting a few assignments a month, and then it kind of turned into a few a week, and then we kind of stayed at about 20 assignments a month for a good year there, and then we actually were able to get in with a few different banks, and it just kind of took off from there.
How many assignments do you currently have?
Right now, I've got about 70 total REO properties. That includes pre-market, you know, what's an eviction pre-market, what's on the market, and what's pending.
We're talking to people across the country. All these markets are different. They're in different phases and different cycles. There are markets where this business is picking up right now and people are interested in getting into REO. So they'd like to know, how did you get into REO? Could we go back and talk about how you first opened the door? How did you get into the REO business?
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say it was very difficult. You know, I fought getting into REO, to be honest with you. I had some great mentors at the time that were telling me, get into REO, you know, pushing me to get into it. But I fought it. You know, I'd see all these REO agents around town that were carrying triple the inventory I had, but they were carrying so much more expenses. And at the time, the banks weren't pricing them right. They weren't selling. My expired systems were working good. I was carrying 20-plus properties and doing very well and not working 80 hours a week. So, you know, it was tough for me to be sold on it initially, where my mistake was they saw the writing on the wall and I didn't. I didn't realize it was going to get near as bad as it did. I don't think any of us really realized it was going to get that bad, but I truly didn't think it was going to hit the levels that it did. So I was scrambling. You know, once it got to the point, you know, one day I woke up and I just had the realization that if I don't get in there, it's going to be very tough for me to stay in the business or to continue at least growing my business at the rate I want to grow it. So it took me about 6 months to get my first account, and that was spending about 3 hours a day prospecting and going after them. How I landed my first account, I had a good friend of mine who's an agent in the office who's an investor. He's just interested in fixing, flipping, and rental properties. So I asked him if I could just start digging through all his HUDs on these bank-owned property deals that he was buying up with the hopes that somehow an asset manager's contact would have been left on a HUD because it happens all the time. So I started reviewing his HUDs. He'd give me every HUD, and then after about a month, I came across an asset manager's email, a direct contact with a bank. And I started emailing that asset manager. I was emailing him. In the beginning, it was every couple of days, and then after that, it was every week. After a few months, he finally decided to give me an opportunity, give me a shot. And actually, another bank after that, which was Nationwide REO Brokers, same thing. Got a contact off of a HUD. I was very aggressive with contacting that agent. And again, it wasn't, I should say, aggressive in the amount of emails and not giving up on emailing him. Each email went like, very experienced in the area. I have a team, even though at that time I really didn't have a strong REO team, but tried to lead them to believe that I did have the team and I was always available if there's anything they need. If there was any agents that were not performing in their area, I'd love a shot. And I promise they won't be disappointed, and that sort of thing. After a few months with him, I just keep emailing. Finally, I emailed him one last email. I said, just give me one shot. I promise I'll quit bugging you. And within 2 minutes, I had an assignment. I said, okay, here you go. So I got the assignment, and you know, then it turned out to be a great account. And it went from there. And so that's kind of how it started. You know, I went and I bought the list, you know, where they say you see all these email pops up or you Google REO and, you know, these lists for $300, you can buy the top 100 asset manager names and number contact lists. You know, I bought those, which weren't really successful for me. So the kind of intro into it for me was the HUDs. One other great site that I'll give you that has been phenomenal. Actually, I've was fortunate enough to get about half of my accounts from this site is REONetwork.com. Now you have to go on there, you have to enter some information, and then they have to accept you on the site. And then if they accept you, then you have to pay a fee. I think it's about $1,200 for the year. So to get in, it's not cheap. But basically, it's where asset managers can find agents in their area. So if they don't have an agent, and I'm lucky because I'm kind of on the outskirts of Phoenix Metro, so a lot of these agents that are asset managers that may be dealing more centrally and have a property that's out a little further, that's where they're going to look. And like I said, I've landed about half my banks from there. And in there, you just go, you put a profile about yourself. You can add a picture. You can add, you know, your team stats, your turnaround times. And in this business, it's fake it till you make it, you know. So, you know, when I did my first profile in there, I wasn't selling hundreds of REOs a year or, you know, or even one REO a year, you know. So a lot of it is looking at other agents' profiles on there, taking ideas from theirs, and again, not copying it, kind of tweaking it to your own. You know, but make it sound good, not being necessarily untruthful, but making it sound good that you do have the experience. And most agents do have the experience. If you've never listed an REO out there, the chances are you've been on the buy side of a ton of these. So you know the time frames. You know what it entails. So that's been a very successful site for me as well.
This very first listing that you took, you were going after a HUD asset manager. Was it a HUD listing?
No, and I apologize about that. It was on the HUD 1, which is the settlement statement. So I apologize about that if that was confusing it. So it was not within the HUD. It was just the settlement statement. So basically when he would get his closing package, I would review the closing package and review all the documents in there, and you just luckily stumble across a contact that shouldn't, whoever put it in there that wasn't supposed to. Cause these asset managers don't want their contact information out there. So it's not supposed to be out there, but somehow it winds up on some of the paperwork here and there. You got to go after that stuff when you get it, if you're trying to fight to get into that business.
How did you make your introduction to him? Did you say, I found your email address on a HUD-1 closing statement?
Yeah, I did say that, just had a recent closing within our company. My company represented the buy side because it was our company. I got your contact information that was on the HUD-1 and just wanted to give you an introduction about myself and about my team and just went from there.
You did this all through email?
Yep, never gotten a phone number. Plus, asset manager, what people don't realize, they're extremely, extremely busy. So I've got some asset managers that are handling, 500-600 properties in their portfolio. They may not be too receptive if you pick up the phone and bug them. At least an email, they can either delete it or when they're slow, take a glance at it. I didn't want to tick anybody off by calling because I knew that their volume was so high and may not be the best way to go.
How long before you got a response from one of your emails? Did you get a response on the first email, or did you have to send emails for a couple months first?
No, it was months and months. I mean, we were probably talking at least 90 days before I got any communication back. And then it was, with the first bank, which was actually Accredited Home Lenders at the time, I got a response after about 90 days of saying, hey, I'm receiving emails. Thank you for contacting us. We'll keep you in mind. And once I got a little communication form, it became a thing of, around the holidays, Thanksgiving coming up. Hey, just to let you know, I'm in town, I'm around this weekend through the Thanksgiving holiday. If something comes up, you can't get a hold of one of your agents and you need something, I am available and I can handle it for you and I'd be happy to help you. Another thing I've done before is offer free BPOs. And I'm not going to do a ton of those, but you go to the asset manager and say, hey, just to establish that relationship and show you that I am a hard worker and I can meet your timelines and I have excellent quality of work. I'll do 3 free updated BPOs for you, which saves them money and can help you get you in the door as well.
Did you perform BPOs before you received your original assignments?
I was, through Equator, accepting BPO assignments and through Clear Capital, all these companies, and doing a lot of them. But to be honest with you, the paid BPO services I have found, at least in my experience, have never resulted in landing an account.
But they did give you experience on how to do a BPO.
Absolutely, because that's one of the most important pieces of the REO is that BPO. So yeah, you definitely need to be experienced on how to complete a BPO, how the systems are. Absolutely, it's a big piece of it. If you're trying to get an REO and you've never done a BPO report, you need to get a dozen of them under your belt. So when you do get that assignment, they know you're not a newbie to the business. They want to see that you know what you're doing, the quality of work's there. They can trust your opinion and your values. It's not just my BPO that they're taking. So every bank is either going to order either an appraisal to judge against your BPO or a second opinion BPO from a neutral party. So they do have another valuation to compare it to. You do want to show them that you have high knowledge of the area and obviously know how to fill out the report correctly and thoroughly.
You had probably had a concept that some of the other folks have, which is if you do BPOs, that'll lead into assignments. And your statement was doing BPOs did not lead into assignments, but it did educate you on how to do a BPO.
Right. And that's my personal experience. And I've talked with other agents that have stated that it has led into REO assignments. My personal experience, I did hundreds of them. I actually had my own dedicated BPO agent on the team that we had to split on the fee. And they were completed in my name, so the asset manager got there coming for me. But we did hundreds and hundreds, and it never resulted in one single listing or getting approved with an REO account.
You talked about the fact that you did some research, you did some investigative work, you acted as a detective, and you found an email address for asset manager. You initiated a campaign. Eventually, after 90 days or so, that led to your first assignment. How did you parlay that into the empire that you have now? How did you add the next asset manager or get more business out of the one that you were working with?
Yeah, it kind of snowballed. One, I will tell you, I wasn't aware of REO Network, the website I gave you. If I would have been signed up on there from the beginning, I may have been able to secure some different accounts and gain some different accounts before going through the settlement statements. But that was kind of an after-the-fact thing. That was a big part of it. But the other thing is, you know, you start getting in with the banks, for example, and now everybody's on Equator today. But back then, everybody wasn't on Equator. I mean, it's much harder to get in with the bank today than it was 4 or 5 years ago. But you get into Equator, you start putting your profile out there, it's getting views from other banks, other asset managers that have a need in that zip code. And you can buy zip codes in there, which I've totally downsized that because I threw away a lot of money and found out that wasn't very effective either. Same thing with the certifications. Threw a lot of money out of all the certifications, which didn't result in any new business. So, you know, asset managers finding that way, finding FREO network, and it just never stopped as far as my prospecting. You know, I kept the settlement statement thing going. And then, you know, one thing that also has been beneficial is, you know, going to some of these REO conferences. Now, I've never landed an asset manager at an REO conference, but what I have done and has been successful at is meeting other agents all over the country that, you know, are at a level that I wanted to become, and we were able to establish a relationship and network and talk, and it give you some helpful insight on the banks that they're in with, or, you know, go to this site, sign up for this site, you know, put your application in, that sort of thing.
Did that network of people that you met at the conferences, the network of top agents, did they ever make an introduction for you to an asset manager?
I've been approached to do that, actually, from other agents that said, hey, if you introduce me, I'll do that introduction with you. I've never felt personally comfortable doing that because, at the end of the day, it could wreck my reputation with that bank. I mean, I know these people. I've met them, had lunch with them, but I don't really know their business model. I don't know them on an extremely personal level, and I've never wanted to risk that relationship with the current bank. So I've never asked anybody to do that. I have been asked by one other agent, which, you know, I had to decline just because I don't personally feel comfortable giving anybody a recommendation that I truly don't know.
So you basically broke into this market without any connections. You just did it by the school of hard knocks. You went in there and aggressively prospected X number of hours a day until you started generating some business.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and in the other agents in my area that had the REO, they guarded it with their life. You know, they weren't helping, you know, they weren't willing to help or give anybody insight, which I understand. You know, at the end of the day, we're all each other's competition. Yeah, so it wasn't, you know, I wasn't given any magic contact or any magic website to sign up on other than REO Network. Like I said, that's been huge for me. I haven't got anything off of it probably in the last 12 months, but for the first few years of getting an REO, a very good site to be on and worked out very well for me. But again, inventory shrunk so dramatically out here. You know, for example, in Maricopa County, last year at this time, there's about 60,000 homes on the market. Right now, there's about 20,000. The assets just aren't there. Whether it's short sale or REO, the inventory is just not out there currently. So in different markets, it could be totally different. You know, if somebody's in a market right now where they're starting to see the beginnings of the defaults, and defaults are really high and they're seeing that, then that would probably be a phenomenal site to get involved in.
Are you working only with private banks, or are you also working with government entities?
Both.
Which government entities are you working with?
At this time, Fannie Mae.
How did you get in with Fannie Mae?
Actually, they contacted me. That was one that was a contact through the site. They were looking for new agents to sign up for my area. You still have to go through all the application process, which was pretty intense. And it took probably about a year from the date that they contacted me before it solidified to anything.
There are a lot of long time horizons that you had to work with to get this thing going. You said they contacted you from the internet. Do you mean that REO Network site?
Correct, yep.
Maybe you should pay them a bonus. REO Network, that's worked out well for you.
Yeah, but again, I mean, it's just like anything. If I get a sign call, it could be a buyer wanting to buy a million-dollar home, but if I don't follow up with it and do my job to follow up with it and stay on top of it, it's not going to solidify to anything. So, you know, it's not one of those things where somebody's going to get the contact and next thing you know, they're just going to start flooding in. You know, you have to be proactive and getting back in touch with them, getting everything that they need, and work your tail off. People don't realize how hard REO is. it's tough. I mean, I live 3 miles away from my office, and I would go three plus days at a time without seeing my wife and kids because I would leave before they're awake, and I'd get home well after they were sleeping. It definitely wasn't an easy road.
This is the end of part one. The interview continues on part two.